tune. Gavin Sonhobel, our attorney at law, is in the house, looking every inch the gentleman of leisure on a Monday afternoon.
There's no leisure on a Monday, Dave.
But look how black it has become.
I know.
The sky has... The last time it got this color at this time of day... There was a very, very severe storm, and I'm just hoping.
I was actually driving here, my staff phoned and said, "Do you mind if we scarp her and get home? Because it looks like there's some inclement weather coming."
Well, I think that's probably a good idea. It's got black. I mean, it's gone like almost like night.
Yeah,
reminds me a little bit of the story of the Battle of Isandlwana in 1879,
yes,
22nd of January, in the middle of the battle at around. Just sort of after midday, when it was should be at its brightest, the sky turned like this.
Yeah,
it wasn't a storm; it was an eclipse of the sun.
Correct.
In the middle or at the peak of this most horrific slaughter, can you imagine those superstitious?
It must have been very, very eerie
on both sides.
Yeah,
you know the
I mean, even the British would have been quite superstitious in that era.
They clearly were. You read the letters of these little fellows from the valleys of. Can face and and they were terribly superstitious, but the Zulu folk had this thing about ubumnyama, darkness. You see, the moon in the cultural terms is a benevolent spirit in a sense, a light that keeps the forces of darkness at bay. But the forces of darkness and the moon are in this eternal struggle, and every 30 odd days or so, you know, the moon waxes and wanes, it loses.
Yeah.
And for a couple of days, when there is
bad
no moon in
happen.
The sky, that's the time of the witches.
Okay.
And can you imagine this battle
the blood
took place
moon.
On the day of the dead moon?
There we go. Yeah.
Scary stuff.
Actually, in cosmological terms as well, the moon plays quite a fortuitous role, and we were apparently sideswiped by something about the size of Mars, and it knocked a whole chunk out of the Earth. And all the debris and matter that were knocked out of the Earth went around in orbit around the Earth and eventually coalesced into the moon. And the gravitational pull of this object that's going around put us into a little wobble of, I think, 16 or something degrees. And that wobble that it put us into actually gave rise to the seasons and the tides. And if that hadn't happened fortuitously a billion years ago or whatever, life on Earth would have been impossible because the one end of Earth would have been roasted and the other end would have been frozen. I mean, the Zulus are quite right. The moon's quite an important adjunct to life on Earth. In fact, without it, they say that life itself would not have originated here.
Well, there's been a huge amount lately of I'm not very well versed in matters astrological, but I have been reading the press or the social media as it is, and it would appear that there has been an inauspicious moon of late in our on our horizon, which has led to lots of uncertainty and unsettlement. People have been feeling that things have been going particularly badly, but the good news is that moon's finished now.
Oh, good. What a relief.
Well, I'm not sure.
There's
I'm
always some confirmation bias. You take your present circumstances and you look outward and you go, well, that's the reason for that. We do have remarkably uncertain times, and that is we've got the bastion of the free world. America's having its elections today, and much turns on the outcome.
And I believe at the moment, just looking at the international press, they say it's on a knife edge. It's never, they say, been so impossibly close to call.
Mm.
And, so on the one hand, this augurs incredibly well for the punters, who are no doubt, taking huge,
something
heavy
to talk
odds.
About.
Yeah. But on the other hand, I suppose... If it is as close a call as they say, then half of America is going to be extremely upset by the outcome, whichever half. But
well,
that's half of the country. The last time that happened, I think they had a civil war. I mean, I don't want to
look. To me, it's fairly obvious that a lot of the malaise in the world at the moment is directly attributable to the previous American election. The fact that, for example, Donald Trump's hard stance in Iran was followed up by Biden releasing all the capital that was frozen and ending the sanctions, which gave Iran quite a lot of money all of a sudden. And they used that, obviously, to fund Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis. And so they use it for one purpose only. And without those funds, I don't think that the Israeli situation would exist today. So, you know, soft men create difficult times. And I think ultimately, you know, we've also, I don't really believe that the Ukraine would have been invaded had America had a strong leadership. And
these
so
are points that Trump has been making quite clearly so in his run-up to the election.
Yeah, so the only point I really want to make is I don't think, I don't know what Trump will and won't do, because he won't say, because he quite pointedly says that if I do show all my cards now, I won't be able to negotiate as I want to when the time comes. But he seems quite confident that he can put an end to most of this. I personally just feel that you know, the ball was dropped, and world order has been suffering as a result. And I can't imagine sort of the cackling Kamala Harris sitting down at a table with Putin and being taken seriously. So, you know, there's a part of me, I'm not a big fan of Trump's manners or his demeanor, but I do think we do, as the West, we need to have somebody fairly strong in power, because, you know, all of the, you know, this situation of property ownership, freedom of speech, and all the freedoms that we enjoy is not a normal thing that's happened in history. It's actually really, really something special. It's only been around for a few hundred years, and we could lose it just as quickly as what we gained it. And if you look around the world, there are lots of autocratic, authoritarian regimes, and that seems to be almost the human default. And to preserve this bit of light that we have, that we call Western culture or the Enlightenment, you know, that takes work, and that takes people who have to be committed to it. And I honestly think there's almost like an existential threat to the West presently. And hopefully, you know, I mean, hopefully, you know, whomever prevails will bear that in mind.
I just can't believe that a country as big and as powerful as the United States fields these two characters to potentially
be the
lead
best.
Them. Yeah. I mean, are they the best? There's something very wrong with the system.
Well, there is.
Because there are very strong folk in America.
There is. And one of the things that that you always tend to have authoritarian sort of strong men that run countries, you know, unless you've got a good constitution and a populace that are democratic in their veins, is the very fact that it is absolutely human nature to game any kind of system that exists to the benefit of a few
at
the cost of the many. And I think democracy is our best chance of undermining that natural process that happens in politics, where you say, well, you can only be around for 4 years. You know, you have to abide by these rules, the Constitution, which started with the Magna Carta, which King John obviously ignored for a while to his own peril. But, you know, we do need those checks and balances. And I saw quite interestingly enough over the past week that we in this country have now voted in favor of the presidential committee that will oversee the office of the president. And, you know, and that was something we never thought would happen. So, you know, it just is one of those things that you people fall one way or the other. They either like authoritarian regimes or they don't. I think Western people are, you know, probably the highest good that we hold is freedom. You know, the freedom to live your life according to your own conscience, with your own ideas of happiness and your own vision for your own life, and not to be pressured into living it on any other terms. And that is the greatest freedom as a human being that you can have, and the greatest good. And we still have a lot of that in the world, but it's not for free. It needs to be stood up for.
Well, yeah, and that's clearly what the past two world wars were fought
quite
around.
Right. Quite right.
And it those was, that sacrificed.
It was fascism and communism versus democracy. Yeah. And, you know, mercifully, authoritarian countries never do well, because you can't really run an economy from the top down. There's too many decisions to be made, and it's easier just to let money do the, you know, people vote with their dollars, and that makes all those little decisions along the way. How many hammers should you make? How many plows should you make? How many cars should you make? Well, you should make as many as you can still make profit. If you make too many, nobody wants them, and you're going to lose money. And if you make too few, you know, you'll see that the price will go up, and you'll be spurred to make more. So those decisions you can't really make from a government saying, well, let's make more cars, let's suddenly make less, let's, you know, because it's all natural.
Yeah.
And
so the free market economy is important things.
It's extremely powerful. In fact, there is no system known historically to mankind that has lifted more people out of poverty than capitalism. And as much as it might have its faults, there's no system that's condemned people to the lowest common denominator as quickly as communism or socialism. In fact, the great thing about communism is it's killed an awful amount of communists.
Well, now there's the thing. Now, I just want to talk. Why do you talk along those lines? You know, socialism is very much sort of front and center when it comes to the ethos of, for example, the MK party that is very much on the rise in KZN. And there was an article in the Daily Maverick as of this weekend that they have already started, reportedly, coalition negotiations, not just talks, negotiations. Willie Zimkunu, who was very senior in the ANC until he jumped ship, is now tasked with this negotiation. And it would appear that, you know, they got 37% of the vote.
Yeah, and declining, by the way.
Well,
according to the polls.
Well, it depends on which polls you read. But it would appear that they kind of stayed away from the negotiating table and therefore locked themselves out of the government, of local government of national unity. Yeah. Now they want in. And they want in on a fairly substantial basis because of the numbers that they attracted during that election. And if this negotiation goes according to their wishes, they may well be one of the primary factors in political decision-making going forward in KZN.
And unfortunately, they are very socialist and communist in their attitudes. I was reading recently, old Milton Friedman said something that really, really is goes to the nut of the problem, and that is you should judge a policy not on its intentions, but on its results. And just for example, if we were to do the national health care and we were to get rid of private health care, then what that'll do is create an exodus of precisely the sort of people that rely on private health care to have a decent doctor to go and see and a decent hospital, because government doesn't provide that at all, not even remotely. And when those people leave because it's unsustainable for them to live here sensibly, it's going to be far worse for the country. And the very people that you're supposedly giving free healthcare to will get an even worse healthcare because of the fact that the people that have to pay for it have now left. And so the intention is wonderful. Everybody should have wonderful healthcare. But the truth of the matter is the result will be disastrous. And it is an existential threat to our economy. You know, it's very simple. This country is a very simple thing to fix. You know, nobody owes us any capital and nobody owes us any investment. You know, as much as there's this sense of entitlement exists amongst some people, nobody owes you anything. If you want capital and you want those inflows and you want your economy to grow, then you have to create the sort of soil that's fertile for investors. And one of the first things you do is you respect property rights. So you get rid of immediately expropriation without compensation or any hint at that sort of thing. And you get rid of, you can't have private health care. Well, of course you can and you should. And so these are all the things, and it's very easy to till the soil and make it fertile. But the thing is, we have this mindset that's rooted in 100 years ago sort of economics that Karl Marx thought up. And it's no longer relevant, and it's never worked anywhere. And I don't understand why we still cling to it. And it is to fix well, this
is
country.
Is it not a little bit of a throwback to the past when there was the struggle and the only folk that were prepared really
of
to
course.
Assist with the
of course,
the needs of those that yes, were in exile? It were the countries that at that stage were still trying.
And you know, again, is it the intentions are wonderful and laudable, but that's not how you grow an economy. And well, people always go, that, well, you know, trickle-down economics doesn't work. Well, no, of course it doesn't work in 5 minutes. It works over 5 years, works over 10 years. Over 20 years, you're America, you know. And so, you know, it's fine saying, well, it doesn't work, it's not going to make any difference in my life. Well, yes, of course, not much is going to change in your life. You can make it a hell of a lot worse by having very bad policies. But if you're prepared to, if you're prepared to put the time in, because all civilization is built over hundreds of years, and all good economies weren't built overnight. I mean, there was no American economy 200 years ago, and but you know, by abiding by the correct principles, and following the correct economic models, you can make a massive difference, and you can make a massive difference in 10, 20, 30 years. We've had the 30 years; we've wasted it.
This is true. I'm cautiously optimistic that if we, as the expression goes, hokus with the government yeah. of national unity,
are,
it seems to be coming.
It's just gone 100 days the other day, and
the results are yeah, there to be yeah. seen. Not as you said, it can't happen instantly, but there seems to be an accountability now in certain quarters. The South African Police Service seems to be suddenly, they've had a huge re-interest in arrests and of bad guys. They've also, of course, just released figures to say that more police officers have been, the lives have been lost of more police officers in the past 23-24 financial year than
never
for a long time. Yeah, 111. It's untenable. But there seems to be this. Ian Cameron has done a tremendous job in his portfolio of now they're conducting lifestyle audits. All those fat cats at the top.
It just takes a will, you know. Yeah. The worst thing they ever did was get rid of the scorpions, because they were very good at investigating high-profile people and coming up with the evidence. And, you know, we've still got a Zondo Commission, and there's still a long list of people who were fingered in that commission, and none of them have been prosecuted. And
Yet. But we...
I really hope so, because... that's
to see results now.
That's how you show that we're serious.
Well, you know, interesting conversation, and I just had a WhatsApp during the course of that from my friend Terence, the marvelous sound man on the North Coast. He says that we make very good company for the drive home in the rain. Awesome.
Oh, good.
So good. I mean, we hopefully this is the idea, because this free flow, hard talk, if you like, it's not designed to create any great ripple effect other than giving you the opportunity to consider these things, and it adds to the national dialogue, I hope, for common sense and good order to progress. We all want the same thing ultimately in this country. We want a better future.
Yeah. And you know, we've got a lot of the basics in place. You know, we've got a very good constitution. We've got freedom of speech. You know, we can still say what we like, and we can, you know, as long as people can express their ideas, whether you agree with them or disagree with them. You know, whoever's got an opinion has gone to some trouble to form it.
Yeah.
And inside of that opinion, as much as you might cut away a lot of rubbish, you'll find that there will be a kernel of truth. There'll be somebody who's identified something that's worth thinking about. And there's nobody in this world that's qualified to tell you what you can and can't hear.
I like that sentiment, and I think that's a good point to end our conversation for today. But Gavin Steinhobel is an attorney at law, and a very good one, I might add. If you need a good attorney, particularly when it comes to property matters, but certainly, you know, whatever is on your mind, you'll find him in the Bolito Village at Kloppers Inc. And Gavin will be back on the air in a week's time. Every Monday afternoon, we spend a bit of time putting to rights the woes of the world.
Yeah,
always a pleasure, Gavin. I look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thank you, Dave.
The afternoon show continues.